I've been asked to say a few words to Earth people about the stars. You see, I've been there. I came from the planet Vulcan. For centuries, you Earthlings have been starstruck. You've had your lucky star. You kiss when you see the first star at night. You have movie stars, and you wish upon a star. Have you considered the possibility that on a star, the star people wish upon an Earth? For example, Earthlight, Earthbright, first Earth I see tonight. Or twinkle, twinkle, little Earth, how I wonder what you're worth. Sounds strange? Well, on Cestus Omicron 3, the all-time hit song is Earth Dust. Also, people will sing, catch a falling Earth and put it in your pocket. And might you not have difficulty accepting the idea of a national anthem called the Earth Spangled Banner? You see, it is, after all, a question of point of view. If I were an emotional creature, I would be shocked by your Earth concept of stars falling on Alabama. Really, I find that most illogical. Now, as to the matter of space sanitation, will you take a moment to consider all the littering and debris my planet has to contend with? Old nose cones, cameras, and even a corned beef sandwich? And those rocket fumes. On Vulcan, our leader's wife has started a Let's Keep Space Beautiful campaign. And now, I must hurry off to a galactic convention of what you Earth people might call those little green people. I leave you with the good advice my father gave me when I left my home planet, Vulcan. Don't let the Earth get in your eyes.
That's Leonard Nimoy as Spock. And Spock, just for people who don't know, he's a character in Star Trek who is a Vulcan, which is a person from another planet who's still inside our universe. Over the break, you heard Spontic, and before that was Lori Berkner from the Dance Remixes CD. And from the compilation Science Fair, you heard MC Fireworks with Secret Agent 23 Skidoo, the song Rocket Science. You're listening to the Children's Hour. Today we are with Dr. Katie Mack. She is a theoretical astrophysicist. That means she studies the way the universe and space all works. And theoretical, she's thinking about the math involved, which is such an interesting thing in and of itself, Dr. Mack. Like the math we learn in school right now can describe things like black holes? How?
It's really about how we talk about what we observe. So when we see something happen in the universe, we can write down our observations. We can write down what it is that happened. And so, for example, if you drop something, you could write down how far above the ground it was when you let go. And you can write down how long it took before it hit the ground. And you can do that with several different heights, you know, several different objects. You can raise something up really high and see how long it takes. You can drop something from lower. You can put it on a ramp and see how long it takes to roll down. And that gives you numbers, that gives you data that you can then work with. And you can say, well, maybe I can put together an equation that says, if I raise the ball up this high and drop it, it'll take this long to reach the ground. And if I raise it up this high, it'll take this long to reach the ground. And that's really all of how we do physics in all different ways. When we look at how the moon orbits the Earth, you know, the moon goes around the Earth in about 28 days, and we can write an equation for how long it takes to go around. That's what theoretical physics is all about. And sometimes we take those numbers and we put them in computers and then we make a computer model. Just like if you play a video game, you might see in the video game that if you move your character forward a little bit and make it jump, it'll follow a certain path. You know, it'll kind of do something related to what you put in when you put in the video game. And that's creating a model of the world in a computer. And you can, you know, manipulate it. And we do that in physics. We create a model of the universe in a computer. We, you know, put together a sort of like a computer game where there's, you know, for example, a sun and then planets orbiting the sun, and we can change the speed of the planet and see how that changes, how it goes around the sun. Those kinds of things are what we work with all the time. And so we can do that with equations. We can do that with computer models. We can do it with looking at patterns and shapes. And that's what theory is all about, is finding those kinds of patterns.
The universe is so big, but I hear a lot of it is full of a thing called dark matter. What exactly is dark matter?
Well, that's a great question, because dark matter is the thing that I spend most of my time thinking about in my research. Matter is a word we use for anything that is really just anything that's stuff. It has weight, it has mass. So, you know, if you pick something up and you drop it and it falls to the ground, that's something that's matter. It has mass. It has mass is just a kind of word for weight in terms of how much stuff is in something. And most matter is the kind of stuff that you can see and touch, you know, like stone or even air is a kind of matter that, even though you can't see it and you can't really touch it in the way we can touch other things, you can, you know, wave it around and it has effects that that you can experience, like when it's windy. Dark matter seems to be something different. So it's a kind of matter. So it has mass, it has gravity, but it doesn't seem like we can see or touch it at all. The reason that we think it's out there in the universe is because the gravity that it has affects how things move around in the universe. So in some cases, we see things moving around in a way that suggests that there's more stuff there than what we can see. There's more stuff there with mass, with gravity, than what we can see. It's something else that has weird properties that seems to kind of move right through other matter, but it still has weight. That's what dark matter is. We're not certain about anything with dark matter. We don't know what it's made of. We don't even know for certain that it's out there, although that seems to be the best explanation for what we observe, for how things are moving around in the universe. And so we're trying to figure out what it is. And that's part of what my job is trying to figure out what dark matter is, because it seems like most of the matter in the universe is this invisible stuff. Something like 80-85% of the matter in the universe seems to be this invisible stuff. And the things we can see, the stars and galaxies, are just kind of moving around in response to all the dark matter that's there. But the dark matter is most of it.
What about black holes? Couldn't they just be like big black holes of dark matter?
That's a good question. I actually just recently worked with some colleagues to write a paper about the possibility of black holes being dark matter. But the kind of black holes you would need to be the dark matter would be really, really little ones, very different from the kind that we think of when we think of a black hole as, you know, something big out there that's, you know, pulling in matter and stuff like that. So there are different kinds of black holes. The kinds of black holes that we talk about that we know are out there are black holes that form when a star dies. So, you know, stars are shining because they're doing nuclear reactions in the center. So they're converting different kinds of atoms to other kinds of atoms, and that process creates light. So all stars are shining because of that. And when a star finishes converting all of the material into the other kind of material, then it doesn't have anything else to be shining. And then it starts to fall toward itself. It starts to collapse. And there are different things that can happen at that point. And if it's a really massive star, much more massive than our sun, then when it falls together, when it collapses, it can sometimes collapse into a black hole. And what a black hole is, it's kind of if all of the matter is coming together and there's so much of it and so heavy that nothing can hold it out anymore. And it collapses together so tiny that it becomes the smallest possible thing you can think of, and that's a black hole. And it kind of changes the space around it, and it becomes this really weird, really cool kind of object. Now we have a lot of ways to understand the existence of black holes. We're pretty sure that they're out there. We're very sure that they're out there. And one reason is because although we can't see the light that goes into black holes, because one of the key things about black holes is that nothing can come out of them. So we can't see the stuff going in, but we can't see the stuff inside the black hole, but we can see that things are falling into the black hole. So sometimes there's gas or dust or even stars really close to a black hole, and those will sort of go around like they're in a whirlpool. So if you've ever seen like a whirlpool, or even just like if you have a bath and you take the plug out of the bath, you know, the water is mostly transparent, but you can see it when it swirls around because it kind of crashes against each other, gets bubbly. And it's like that with matter falling into black holes, with gas or stars falling into black holes. And so we see that shining of the stuff that's falling into black holes. And that's one of the ways that we find black holes, that we know they're out there, is because we see stuff falling into them. And then we also see that they disturb space when they fall into each other. So two black holes sometimes collide with each other, and that causes ripples in space called gravitational waves. And we can pick those up as well.
Wow, I am learning a lot from you, and I hope you are too, listeners. This is Dr. Katie Mack. She's also known as Astro Katie. We've got a lot of links and more posted at childrenshour.org. Look for this episode called The Universe, and we're going to be right back with more.
Rainbow sparkling galaxy shimmers in the moonlight.
This is Jackie B and the Mini Band.
A thousand universes shining bright.
I'm dancing with the stars. I'm flying very fast.
I'm flying next to Mars.
Do, 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 do. Do, do, do. Do, do, do.
I see a shooting star.
Shooting star.
It's flying very fast.
Very fast.
To make my wishes come true.
My wishes come true.
For me.
For me.
And you. Stardust starts a new generation. Wishes come true.
My wishes come true.
For me.
For me.
And you.
And you.
I see a shooting star.
You're listening to the Children's Hour. I'm Katie Stone, and we have with us today on the show Dr. Katie Mack. She's a theoretical astrophysicist, and she also has an expertise in a unique area, the timeline of the universe. We have known with math and physics how to calculate the beginning of the universe. Scientists generally agree it's around 13.8 billion years ago, but Dr. Mack's emphasis is on extending the math the other direction, forward, to what happens as the universe ages. Using the principles of physics that we understand today, there are many theories as to how the universe ends. But spoiler alert, it's billions and billions and billions and billions of years away from today. One thought is that the universe just keeps on expanding and expanding forever until we are all isolated in a dark, dark universe. Another theory is that we continue to expand and expand as a universe until we eventually reach some sort of an end. And then the universe will start collapsing backwards These are all theories, but all of these theories are based on the math and the physics and the science that we understand today that seems to be proving other things to be true about the universe. Dr. Katie Mack explores all of this in her book, The End of Everything, Astrophysically Speaking. Dr. Katie Mack is our guest, and we're going to be back with her in just a minute. Coming up next, this is Kathy Fink and Marcy Marxer, right here on the Children's Hour.
Wouldn't it be heavenly to know the constellations? Scan the skies and recognize their names and their locations. Though they're only figments of our own imaginations. Wouldn't it be heavenly to know the constellations? Hercules, Delphinus, and Andromeda, and Lyra, Sagitta, and Pegasus, Dorado, and Lacerta, Ursa Major, Ursa Minor, Cetus, and Orion. I could name a dozen more if I were really trying. In the zodiac, you'll find a dozen constellations. You can trace them in the sky with just a little patience. Leo, Virgo, Scorpius, and Gemini, and Taurus. These are five, now who can name the other seven for us? Determines what we see among the constellations. Atmosphere, the time of year, as well as their locations. Latitude and time of night are prime considerations. Each of them are factors when we see the constellations.
Past quasars and pulsars and black holes I blew, past galaxies far, far away. In a rocket as rapid as lightning I flew, for 91 years to the day. I ripped past Orion, the nebula's eye, ignoring the aliens' laughter, ha ha ha. My beard had grown down to my ankles when I arrived at the place I was after. The edge of the universe, blind with a curb, and a street paved with bricks and with mortar. The signs on the houses read, "Do not disturb," and the meters all blinked out of order. So I sailed back to Earth and got younger and thinner. My beard disappeared to mere fuzz. I walked in my house just in time for my dinner. And no one believed where I was.
You're listening to the Children's Hour, and that was poetry by Mike and the Mighty Magic Pants. Kathy Fink and Marcy Marxer before that, The Constellation Jig. In the background, Space by Samite. You're listening to the Children's Hour today. We're learning about the universe with Dr. Katie Mack, a theoretical physicist. We've got links and a lot more posted. Visit us at childrenshour.org. Look for this episode, The Universe.
You're listening to the Children's Hour Kids Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Thanks to the Outpost Performance Space in Albuquerque, New Mexico, for hosting the Children's Hour. Support for the Children's Hour is provided by United Way of North Central New Mexico. Support provided by the City of Albuquerque and the Urban Enhancement Trust Fund. Support for the Children's Hour provided by the County of Bernalillo, New Mexico. Many thanks to the users at tokenibis.org, who direct funds to the Children's Hour every week. Keep up with the Children's Hour and subscribe to our monthly newsletter at childrenshour.org.